Welcome to another Distinct Nostalgia by MIM.
More than a podcast.
The Distinct Nostalgia autumn season continues with more fabulous celebration of soap. And this time we're going all the way back to the mid-70s with the arrival of one of Coronation Street's most enduring characters. She was born in the latter days of 1976, and by the early days of 1977, Christabel Finch was being watched by millions around the world as she became Deirdre's little girl, Tracy. Now living in Australia, Christabel has been giving an exclusive interview to Distinct Nostalgia. Enjoy, this is quite a gem.
Christabel Finch as was, now Christabel Tallowin, is that how you say it?
That's correct. Yeah. Absolutely, yeah.
Thank you for joining Distinct Nostalgia. Now, you were the original Tracy Langton, as it would have been at the time.
Correct, yes.
Yeah, in 1976, was it, or 77?
Well, no, it was 77.
77.
So I was born in 76, but right. Literally 15 days later, 77.
Literally, so you were part of Coronation Street almost since birth.
That was it, yeah. So so I was born on the 21st of December, and then literally on the 5th of January, straight in filming. So.
And when was Tracy supposed to have been born? Do you know?
Well, I think they obviously record like 2 weeks ahead, so maybe it was like the 16th or the 20th of January or something like that, I think.
Yeah, yeah. So she was a winter baby in terms of, yeah, absolutely. So, I mean, obviously you don't remember that far back. you'd be amazing to remember that far back. But you were in the show for how long?
Until 1983. So I was basically seven
right,
when I
okay,
left.
Okay. So talk us through it then. When did it start to, I mean, you were growing up and you were sort of, you'd probably got these sort of dual lives, haven't you, of a life at home and a life in this weird, yes, make-believe place. You know, what? Tell us a bit about that.
Well, look, to be honest, it felt very normal because it'd been like ever since I was, you know, a baby, I'd been there every single, you know, every week filming. So it used to be every Thursday, every week, do the afternoon, get out of school, get out of the spelling test, and go down to the studios. So yeah, it was a very normal part of life, and for me it was, you know, but my friends were not very aware of it. And I remember one person saying to me, are you on Sesame Street? And I was like, no, I'm on Coronation Street. So yeah, it was just normal for me.
Yeah, it's interesting. So they obviously thought it was a good idea to get a baby right from the beginning. And see that baby grow up. That was the idea, I suppose, really.
Well, look, what happened was my mum had obviously given birth to me in the St Mary's Hospital in Greater Manchester. And a casting director, I think her name was Judy Hayfield, needed a newborn baby for Coronation Street, for Deirdre. And she went to that hospital, out of all the hospitals in Manchester, and spoke to the matron who was in charge of the hospital at the time and said, oh, have you got any newborn babies? We need like a small little baby just so it looks like she's newborn. And she said, oh, well, yes, Mrs. Finch has just had a baby. Why don't you go and talk to her? And so she went in and said, hello, listen, can we use your daughter to be in Coronation Street? And Mum said, oh, I have to ask my husband about that. But Mum was under the impression it would just be one episode. So, and then it just kept on going and going and going and going. So, yeah, until we left when I was seven.
Because, of course, in a lot of shows back in the day, whenever a baby emerged, a newborn baby, we really wouldn't see them, would we? Or they'd be a doll and a bit of a noise would appear and that would be it, wouldn't it? And occasionally you get a glimpse of this doll and realise it wasn't real. So this might have been, it probably was quite a bit of a breakthrough at the time. So that's interesting. So how had your mum and dad been fans of The Street? Did they watch The Street on a regular basis or anything like that?
Look, I think at the time, mum didn't watch it. But to be honest, I think she watches it a lot now. So yeah, she knew of Coronation Street, but she didn't watch it regularly.
Yeah. So what do you remember then? What's the earliest memory do you think you have of the street? I mean, obviously you were there from 0 to 7. So, and I think my memory is when I was a kid, I think I remember everything from when I was about, I was born in 72. So I do remember the young Tracy. I remember you in it. And I probably started remembering things around about 5. So when do you think you go as far back as that, would you say? Or?
Well, I think so. It's strange because obviously I've got the footage to look back on. So whether it's real memories or it's fake memories of that footage being put into my head, but I do remember, you know, just being on the set at a very young age. So maybe I want to say 3. I really do, because that's when I got my cat. So we bought a cat when I was 3, and I'm very, very vividly. So being on the set and, you know, with Albert Tatlock, do you remember? Ken Barlow's Uncle Albert. So I remember filming with him and being on the set and you know, him sitting in an armchair. So it's all kind of not allowed to leave that set. So you had to stay on that, you know, that little scene until the scene had been shot. Do you know what I mean? So it's, you know, different memories. Like I remember vividly shooting. It's like an episode of Tracy being locked in the bathroom. And she was at Alf Roberts' corner shop. And Deirdre was working in the shop. And I was obviously with her. And she'd gone to... wanted to go to the loo. And I'd gone upstairs to go to the toilet. And apparently Tracy had locked the bathroom door and couldn't unlock it with the key anymore. So I remember shooting that scene and it being a raised stage, and Alf, he was coming through the window like an exterior, you know, because they shot outside obviously as well and that kind of thing. So he was coming through the window trying to get this plastic bag down to Tracy to put the key in the plastic bag. And I remember saying, I had to say, I can't, you know, I can't put the key in. And holding up a comic to the keyhole for Deirdre to for her to say what the comic said, you know, what does this say, Mom? And so I remember that massive scene because it was a long shoot, because it was like literally half the episode was all about me being locked in the bathroom.
But when did it sink in that you were that this wasn't some kind of strange weird world that you were just sinking into every week, but actually you were making a TV program? I mean, when did that sink in, do you think?
I don't think it ever did. I don't think it ever did. Because, to be honest, I don't think I remember watching it, you know, in the living room with my mum and dad. It was more like years later, because my mum used to record it, you know, on the video cassette. So years later, watching it back and going, oh, wow, that's weird, isn't it? It's just, so I don't think I was aware that it was a TV show at all.
Now, there's a couple of stories, one in particular I remember related to Tracy. We'll go to that in a moment. But before we do, let's talk a little bit about some of the people then. So your on-screen mum, of course, was Deirdre, Deirdre Langton, as she was at the time.
Yes.
What do you remember about Anne Kirkbride?
She's just such a beautiful person. She was she was my second mum, really. I mean, she was, you know, a youthful, you know, bright, caring person. We used to share a dressing room together. So she would run through my lines with me as well as my mum. And she used to buy me, you know, Barbies and Cindy's, and she's just lovely. Yeah, wonderful person.
And of course, back then, because her image changed over the years, but back then she used to have sort of longish hair, didn't she? And of course, huge glasses, as we remember.
Yes, absolutely.
And do you remember the huge glasses as a
of
kid?
Of course.
Because she didn't wear them in real life, did she, the huge glasses, I don't think. She used to put them on for the show, if I remember rightly.
I think you're correct. Yeah, I think that's absolutely right, yeah.
So what scenes do you remember with her? Because I remember a lot of things like her doing, you know, the ironing or washing and going through clothes and things like that, and Tracy being in the background and saying, Tracy, don't do that, or whatever. What do you, any little things you remember?
Oh, to be honest, it's so very vague, to be honest. I mean, like that massive scene with being in the locked in the bathroom.
Do you remember your auntie Emily?
Of course, yes. But again, it was kind of like I was just in the scene. It wasn't like they were having a conversation with me. Do you know what I mean? So it was more like I was in the background while the real acting was happening.
did you have scenes with Auntie Emily where you'd be sat there reading a book or something, or she'd be looking after you? Or I know she'd come and take you to go places or things like that. Because Emily and Deirdre were very close back then, weren't they? They were next door neighbours or whatever. And Emily used to look after Tracy quite a lot, didn't she?
Yeah, she did. But look. Again, I'm really sorry. I just don't really remember. I can remember a few scenes. Like there's one where Ken Barlow had like I think he was running a newspaper at the time, and he was celebrating getting the business going, and we were sitting on the sofa, and I know Deirdre was there, and I can't remember who the other person was, but there was someone else in the scene. And they were celebrating. They were like getting champagne out, popping the cork and pouring out the champagne into the glasses. And my line was, can I try a bit, please? And I thought, you know, I was only like maybe six, and thinking, oh, it's going to be champagne. But I've never tasted champagne before. I didn't know what to expect. But it wasn't champagne. It was apple juice. And you know how apple juice is a little bit kind of oaky? And it kind of, when I drank it, it went down the wrong hole. I started coughing and choking and they left it in. The producers were like, yeah, we love the fact she's coughing her guts up.
Do you remember things like, because obviously, I know these days they just do one take and that's it off the half time, because there's so many episodes of not just Corrie, but all the drama serials or soaps. But in those days, of course, they would have retaken things several times. Do you remember having to do that? Do you remember having to repeat what you just said a few times?
Yeah, definitely. I think, things went wrong, so they'd retake again. And I think, being a kid as well, I'm sure I remember me going like, oh, I want to go home, you know, mum, because mum's obviously in the outside of the scene, you know, in the darkness where the cameras are. I don't think it was a massive prima donna, but you know, I remember shooting a few scenes. But if you look, sometimes I look back on footage of me and you can see me in the background where I sort of go, oh, like, you know, gesturing, going, oh, as though, because I've missed a line, as though, like, I missed it, and Kirkbride just continues the scene. And it's obviously, they've tried to get me to get that line correct and it's just not worked out. So they just can keep going, which is good.
What's your memory of literally the physicality of it? Because I remember being a kid and you'd go to school and, you know, at the time, everything was huge, wasn't it? And now you go back to a primary school or whatever and you see these tiny little seats that you sat on and all the rest of it. Well, you were there in this sort of artificial world where I know everything is slightly different size, isn't it, on television? But
yes.
At the same time, for you, everything would have been huge, wouldn't it? Big cameras, big boom mics bearing down on you.
Yeah,
yeah. What do you remember of those kind of things?
Yeah, that's true. Actually, I can remember looking up and seeing the boom mic going, and like reaching for it, that kind of thing. Like when you're very young. But it's a strange concept because it's like this little, well, this box, you know, this set. Being in this massive warehouse, you know, big doors and ropes and pulleys everywhere, and scenery being up in the rafters, and yeah, it was bizarre. And then being backstage as well, seeing like all the props and the weights holding up the scenery and the stairs as well. Like I can always remember, you know, I have to go up the stairs. You know, they're about, let's say, I want to say about maybe 5-6 feet off the ground, you know, quite tall, and me being very little. And obviously, they don't want me to keep me up there, so I remember jumping off into my mum's arms. So they're keeping the scene going in the, you know, the kind of like the corridor area where the stairs are. But yeah, the stairs not going anywhere.
So you were in Deirdre Langton's house at the time, mainly. Occasionally, yes. You'd probably be in the street. You'd be walking the street with Deirdre, yes. I presume. Yeah, you remember yeah. that? Yeah. And what other places do you remember? Do you remember turning up in the corner shop, or, you know, what other places do you remember?
Yeah, so the corner shop, obviously, with that scene with the bathroom. But remember going into the corner shop going, oh, look at all the sweets. And the sweets being, you know, in those containers back then. Where you like, you'd be like a 10p mixture of sweets, wouldn't it, back then in those days? Thinking, oh, I really want some. And I remember looking outside on the street, looking into the corner shop window. But obviously, there's in the outside exterior, there's no interior of the actual on the actual street. So, you poke your head through the door and it's just rubble. So,
I presume you would never have turned up in the Rovers, would you, as a little girl?
Really? No. But look, you know, I don't remember this, but there was that massive scene where Deirdre, I think she left me outside the Rovers' return.
Well, this is what I was about to say. This was the big storyline, which I remember as a kid, about 1979-ish, I think. And basically, a lorry went into the Rovers, and she thought you'd been killed by the lorry, didn't she?
Yeah, I know. But what makes me wonder is, like, what had she got into the Rovers and just left me outside? I mean, how rude is that? I mean, she'd be done for social services, wouldn't she, nowadays?
Wasn't the storyline something about some woman that Deirdre, yes, had befriended in hospital or something? Oh. Didn't she take her for a walk or something? She'd come into the programme. She's a bit weird. She had this problem where I think she'd lost a child or something, and she was all...
Okay.
Something like that. I think that was the story.
See, but you're probably, you know, right. But I was under the impression it was a younger person, like a teenager, saw me in the pram, you know, in the, you know, the pushing kind of buggy thing, and basically was like, oh, she's very cute, and just swiped me out and took me off. That's what I was under the impression, but you're probably more correct than I am. So.
It was certainly a big drama. That was a really big storyline at the time. I remember.
I know.
What
a way to be killed off. You know?
You survived. So what about things that they got you to do to occupy your time? So, you know, in terms of the show, so I'd often see you there, sat there reading a book or something, I don't know, did they get you playing with, you know, toys and things like that? Can you remember any of those?
I think so. I mean, I remember having this kind of electronic toy. It was like I can't remember what it's called, it used to speak back to you back in those, it's like 1980s. And so it's like, you press a button, you go A, B. And I used to be thinking, oh, this is incredible. And I really wanted it, but I wasn't allowed to have it, you know, to take it home. It had to stay on the set. But I used to sometimes bring my own toys in. So I had this puppet Smurf. And again, you know, I'm just playing. And I had this tissue. And I'm sitting in the background blowing the Smurf's nose. And again, they keep it in. They keep this stupidity in, you know, in the show. So you can see me blowing the Smurf's nose and having a little chat with it. And
I suppose it's just, again, at the end of the day, it comes over as quite natural, doesn't it, you know? I do remember quite a few shots, actually, where sometimes the camera would linger on you for a while doing things, you know, because in those days you found that things were much slower. Everything's quick, 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 quick now. But in those days, they liked to show things just happening. So a scene might start with you playing with your toys or something and then suddenly zoom to somewhere else. But, you know, just to show the setting, you were there playing and whatever, and, you know, it'd go on from
Absolutely.
There, which is quite interesting. So let's talk about some of the other people then. I know it's difficult to remember, but your dad, of course, your original, you know, obviously Bill Roach became your stepdad, but as Ken,
yeah.
but The original Ray Langton, of course, was Neville Buswell. What do you remember about him?
I don't remember anything.
Really? That's interesting.
I think he left before I had any memories, annoyingly. So I really can't comment.
Well,
the
character went to Holland, I think, to work or something.
Yeah. Okay.
And they split, Deirdre and him eventually split up. And he'd been in it since the late 60s, on and off. Which is quite interesting. But yeah, so you don't remember anything about him. But you mentioned that you remember Uncle Albert. He was a grand old fella, wasn't he? I mean, the old chap he'd been born in the 1900s, in the 1800s, hadn't he? So you know, he'd been around a long time. So what was he like? He probably was just like a granddad, wasn't he? I presume.
Oh, massively. I mean, he was just again a very gentle soul. And I just remember one time they were doing this promotion, maybe Christmas time, where he had to dress up as Father Christmas and I had to sit on his knee. And they said, and I didn't know it was Albert, you know, I didn't know it was Uncle Albert. So I was like, okay. And they said, pull his beard off. I said, no, I'm not doing that. Because, you know, when you're a kid, you think, that's the real Father Christmas. I'm not doing that to Father Christmas. So they ended up, he had to take it off. And I was like, oh, shocked that it's Albert Hancock dressed as Father Christmas. He was like an icon of the show, you know.
Yeah, he'd been there since the beginning. And presumably you never, as a kid, you sort of just got to know them as their characters' names. You didn't really know them as their actors' names, did
exactly.
you?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Yeah, completely.
And so what about, we mentioned Emily, what about Eileen Derbyshire? How did you remember talking to her much? Remember having much to do with her? Obviously, you were in the scenes together, but you don't remember her as a person, no.
Unfortunately, no. It's more like the central kind of people, like, you know, obviously, you know, Bill Roach, Ken Barlow.
Yeah. Well, tell us about Bill then. What was it like working with Bill? Can you remember?
Again, a lovely guy, but I think it was more like he was on set more than me being involved with him out of set. It's funny. I kind of remember. Do you remember the later on the show where Deirdre was having an affair with Mike Baldwin, and that was all going on when I think I was just about to leave. So I was still there, and I remember sitting on the stairs. So I must have been about seven, and obviously Deirdre and Ken having this massive row, and me sitting on the stairs listening to this going, I've never heard them shout at each other before. And I was quite upset about it. So seeing them do that scene was quite shocking for me being a child, you know, because they've always spoken very nicely together. So that was interesting seeing his different kind of persona coming out in Ken, you know.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I when I was a kid, I grew up in a household where my mum and dad rowed constantly, absolutely constantly, sadly. Yeah. And I used to be in that situation quite a lot, sat on the stairs listening to what they were going, because I couldn't sleep because that's all they were doing was rowing all the time, you know. And he would get quite scary in a way, because you say you don't like to see your parents. I know they weren't your real parents, but you don't like to see them fighting, do you? You know what I mean? It's not nice.
Absolutely.
So that's interesting. And what about other characters? I mean, is there anybody else on the show that you remember that sort of would always be quite nice to you? I mean, was anybody? I mean, obviously, I know that the scenes that you're in are very isolated a lot of the time, aren't they? You're focused on your little family kind of thing. But
yes.
Were there anybody? I mean, you know, did you nip into the I don't know, into the cabin and ever end up speaking to, you know, Rita or Mavis or anything like that? Do you remember those as characters?
That's a really good question. I'm just trying to thinking back. Well, look, it's more like it's not like being on set and speaking to them. It's more like, you know, in the actual dressing rooms or in the corridors of Granada. So, like, I remember being about three and I used to have this little tricycle and I remember going up and down the corridors and it being very proud of it. And it used to squeak, you know, and I remember one person, I can't remember who it was, but one person coming and saying, stop, and just putting oil on my my wheels to stop it squeaking. And then literally, I think Brian Tilsley, so Chris Quentin, comes through the big doors of, in the corridors, and he's like, oh, that's a nice bike. And he gets me to get off, and he sits on it, and then he breaks it. I mean, how rude is that? So I was in tears, and he was like, oh, sorry, and just walked off. I was like, thank you so much, you know.
Because you were in the show before him, of course. You got back further than Chris Quentin.
Exactly. I'm just trying to think who else was there. I mean, look, I went on This Is Your Life with for Johnny Briggs, who was Mike Baldwin, and for Bill Roach, who was Ken Barlow. I think I remember being backstage before, you know, like the green room before you go in, and the lady who played Vera Duckworth, I think her name was Liz Dawn. I remember her getting herself ready in the green room, and like, there's loads of mirrors, and she's putting her makeup on, but she didn't have her wig on. So and I didn't realize she wore a wig, and I'm sitting there, you know, looking at it, going, is that Vera? But she's got black hair, and it's all tied up, and I was kind of really shocked, going, oh, she wears a wig. I was really surprised. So that was quite interesting. And then also, like, you know, because obviously, This Is Your Life was Eamon Andrews, and he was a big kind of guy at the time, in, you know, in the 80s. And
well, Wednesday at 7 was the best kept secret of the week, wasn't it? It was a big secret.
Oh yeah,
big secret.
So it was like, oh, meeting him was like, because he was quite a tall guy as well. I was like, oh, I'm meeting someone famous. Yeah, so it's so good. But I suppose that's really literally.
What about people like? Did you ever meet people like, or remember people like Doris Speed or Violet Carson, who played Annie and Nina? Do you remember them at all?
Look, there's a beautiful picture of Violet Carson, which is Ina Sharples holding me as a baby. There's a lovely little, well, not, I don't know if it's a lovely little story, but it was my christening, you know, Tracy's christening, and all the cast and the extras had to go down to a cathedral in Manchester somewhere where I was being christened. And they'd taken me off, and obviously I was just still a baby and everything. And my mum was left behind in the dressing room. And she's like, oh, they'll come and get me. Someone will come and get me because I need to be there. You know, she needs to be there. It's her baby who's off, you know, being taken by these people. And anyway, so the bus left, the coach left to go to the cathedral, apparently. And then literally like about 20 minutes later, there's a knock on the door. And it was Violet Carson's chauffeur. She had her own car. How good is that? And he came to pick up my mum. And she's like sitting in this beautiful car, being chauffeur driven to the cathedral to be an extra there at the christening. So I think it's a beautiful little memory that my mum has about Violet Carson and her chauffeur, which is beautiful.
And Ashley's distinct nostalgia conversation with Christabel Finch, who played Corrie's original Tracy, continues in just a few minutes.
Do you want a cup of tea? I'll have half a cup. And that caught on. Yeah, that became a kind of catchphrase, I think.
It was the hilarious film of 1999. It
wasn't anything to do with race or religion or creed or colour. It was as simple as an art student who thinks he's all free and easy and thinking that that's going to be okay.
East is East by Ayub Khan Din broke new ground by portraying a relationship between a British woman and her Asian husband. And as a new version of the story comes back to the stage in Birmingham, why not remind yourself of the movie classic with Distinct Nostalgia's special trilogy of star interviews.
Oh, frig off and wash your bastard curtains, you dirty cow. And I swear to God, that's one of the best lines I've ever had to say in my life.
But the film had a serious side too, tackling both racism and domestic violence.
I threw myself and put all my physical strength into trying to stop him. And I couldn't.
In Helsinki, they were saying, I can't believe you've made this film. It's incredible because it's showing what life is like for us now.
A series of special interviews with Linda Bassett, Leslie Nicol and Chris Bisson.
It was a great script and it was a timely thing to tell because it hadn't been told before.
They've done all sorts of incredible things to transport you back in time to give you an authentic feel of what it was like.
This series of special interviews is available now at distinctnostalgia.com.
If nobody was told what you were meant to do, if there weren't any rules, we would be living in a totally different format.
A brand new podcast featuring rarely heard voices from across the UK and around the world.
Bisexuality is not really understood because people have biphobic tendencies.
And the second you mention bisexual, just their ears pick up.
Contemporary conversations around bisexuality.
Oh, well, you're still confused, right? No, I'm not confused.
We are questioned so much more than people when they come out as straight or gay.
It's intense pressure of like, am I sure? You're literally like monitoring yourself.
Every episode will include a very personal story as we try to paint a real picture of bisexual Britain.
This is Bisexual Brunch, available now wherever you get your podcasts.
The autumn arrives on Distinct Nostalgia with a host of new soap, drama, comedy and entertainment treats, including Casualty at 35. We mark the show's milestone birthday by meeting the woman who uttered the very first words.
I think the first words were good night. Seems good. Ironic, but yes.
And then in actual birthday week, Distinct Nostalgia meets a woman who became one of the main female faces fans took to their heart for several decades. Kathy Shipton, who became Duffy.
So you'd go into this rehearsal room, the whole room is laid out like the studio set. They've got it there and you haven't got a clue. And then they've got poles and they're saying the poles are the edge of the cubicles. So all of us would be going in going, whoosh. And my first shot, I walked in on the real set in BBC Studio D in White City, and I went, and they went, Kath, you don't have to do that because there's a real curtain, you know, all of this ridiculousness.
And we've other Casualty blasts from the past as we repeat our conversation with Jonathan Kerrigan.
And then there's some intriguing soap specials. We're meeting the first Tracy, Christabel Finch, who played the character from her birth in 1977.
It felt very normal because it'd been like ever since I was a baby, I'd been there every single week filming. Get out of school, get out of the spelling test and go down to the studios. My friends were not very aware of it. And I remember one person saying to me, saying, are you on Sesame Street? And I was like, no, I'm on Coronation Street.
And we've a surprise Emmerdale reunion.
There's also a Magpie reunion.
What was very different about ours is, first of all, we were all much better looking.
I never said that.
I think we were younger than the Blue Peter presenters. You know, just a bit more in tune with the people that watched us. We had 7 million people watching twice a week.
And Tim Vincent goes in search of Valerie Singleton, bumping into other Blue Peter stars along the way.
Stuart Miles.
Tim Vincent, as I never breathe. What are you calling me for? What do you want?
Well, I'm actually looking for Valerie Singleton's number, but of course, I'm checking in on you.
Trips to Sun Hill and The Bill.
Memories of Darling Buds of May, The Tomorrow People, and interviews with classic stars Jeanette Scott and Melvin Hayes, and legendary TV composer Dennis King.
Our great sitcom writer series continues as we sit down with Clement and Lefrenet, who penned Porridge and The Likely Lads.
That had an instant response. The very next day, I was shooting a commercial, and nobody had any idea that I had anything to do with it, but I heard them all talking about it, and that made me feel that maybe we had another hit.
And as well as all that, we've got the quiz.
Oh, that's amazing. Oh.
A bumper autumn of memories.
Only on Distinct Nostalgia.
More than a podcast.
Do you remember Jean Alexander, who played Hilda Ogden?
I really wish I can remember, because she was just amazing, wasn't she?
She was. And Pat Phoenix?
I mean, look, Pat Phoenix, again, it's not my memory, but my mother's memory. Okay, so So I was about 1.5, 2, and apparently the director needed Tracy to cry. And I, you know, I was a happy baby, so happy child, so never would cry on cue, you know. It would be like, so they said, look, Mrs. Finch, can you try and get Chrissy to cry? And she's like, oh, I'll give it a go. And she's going, oh, you're a very naughty girl. I'm very upset with you. And I was like, oh, and started crying. Pat Phoenix, Elsie Tanner, she comes storming down from like, where, you know, like the control room. She's watching it on screen, what my mum's doing, you know, saying, telling me off. And she comes up to my mum and she says, don't you ever do that. I'm going to report you to social services. You should never be doing that to your child. And don't ever listen to the directors. Don't let them manipulate you and tell you to tell your child off and make her cry. So since, you know, since she did that, they always used a sound effect of a baby crying. So again, my mum experience with Pat Phoenix was incredible, really, you know. So
was she,
yeah, that's her memory.
Was Pat being real there? She wasn't trying to add to it to make
yeah.
it. Oh, right, okay.
it was because she was seeing my mum in the, you know, she was watching the control room because obviously it's not being filmed, and she's like, you naughty girl. So she's like, oh, I can't believe you're doing that to your daughter.
Well, they got over it. They carry on talking to each other after that, I presume.
Of course, yeah. So I think that's probably really
it's
mostly of.
It's fascinating, though, isn't it? I mean, when you look back at it and you look back at these, when you see all the different episodes, it must be equally fascinating for you to keep watching what, because you've got your, you know, in those days we didn't, you know, people didn't have. You know, there were people who did cine camera things at home and all the rest of it. But here you were sort of in a, you know, the nation's biggest programme, in fact, one of the globe's biggest programmes, as a little girl, sort of living out your childhood in this, you know, in front of the cameras, you know. I mean, when you look back at it, does it, are you quite proud to have been part of all that, do you think?
Of course. I mean, what a crazy opportunity is that? It's, not even to go through, you know, like an agency or anything. It was just, back then it was like, Kelmer Yeals, the child, you know?
And what happened then, so, at the end? Why did they decide when you got 7 that was it? They wanted to get rid of you or?
Well, actually, what happened was my parents moved to Guernsey in the Channel Islands. So it would not have been possible to fly every week up, so yeah, so really we kind of left.
Right, okay, so you left. Now what's interesting about it is what we need to do here from a point of view of the soap viewer, the Coronation Street viewer, who's seen how Tracy has become this, you know what she's become, she's an absolute nightmare.
Of course. Yeah.
What was going on in your childhood in those first 7 years that led to all that? That's what we really want to know.
I don't know. I think I was a very lovely child. I have no idea. Why is she so cruel?
I know, but what happened after that? You're probably aware of this. What happened after that was that she wasn't in it for a while. And Deirdre would always refer to her as being upstairs playing her tapes. She was playing her tapes
That's
for
it.
About 5 years, I think, until Dawn, I think it was Dawn Acton was the next person, I think, who came along.
Well, I think it was Holly.
Holly, yeah, I think it was, yeah.
I can't remember her last name, but Holly was next. But I think she'd only did like a year
maybe two. But there was a period of time when you never saw Tracy. She was upstairs playing her tapes.
Exactly,
so it's those tapes that we worry about. We need to know what was on those tapes.
Absolutely.
It's quite funny, isn't it? So there have been, I don't know how many Tracys there have been. Is it about 4 or 5? I can't remember now.
Four
Tracys.
Yeah.
Four Tracys. And have you ever met any of the others then?
I've met Dawn.
Okay.
We I can't remember under what circumstance we met, but we'd gone to Manchester to do, I think it was like more like a programme, like Where Are They Now? And we both ended up being together, which is great. She's lovely. She, at the time, because this must have been about, at least 15 years ago or 20 years ago or something. And she was a DJ in Manchester, hasn't she? And she used to, her DJ place was called like Tracy's Bedroom or something, I think.
Well, yes, with those tapes. Those tapes.
Yeah, exactly.
You might as well build on the reputation, haven't you? What happened? What a lot of people will be interested to know is what happened to Christabel Finch. What did you do after Coronation Street?
Listen, when I was 11, I really got into drama. I absolutely had a wonderful drama teacher at my school in Guernsey, and I just loved creating, you know, and acting. But look, I didn't want to go down that kind of line of being an actor. So I did a degree in theatre, I did an MA in theatre, and then I did a teaching degree as well. So I became a drama music teacher, and absolutely loved bringing drama and theatre to younger people to, you know, help with their creativity and confidence. And then obviously I met my husband and we had a child together. My daughter's now 13 and she's very musical. She hasn't told me that she likes drama yet, which I'm very upset about. So I'm like, come on, let's get you on the stage.
Do you think that interest in drama and now you managed to carry on with, you know, focusing on drama probably came from your, you know, your roots in Corrie?
Oh, I'd like to say it did, but it's so hard because to me, when I was on Coronation Street, I don't feel like I was acting, you know? You know, because when you're older, when you start actually acting, it's a totally different process. It was more like, can you say this line? Like, mummy, I want my dolly. When on the correct cue, but there's no acting in it. It's more like just like being a parrot.
Were you aware as a kid on Coronation Street that they were acting? Can you remember, you know, Anne Kirkbride talking to you elsewhere and then suddenly turning into this persona of Deirdre?
That's a really interesting question. Maybe didn't understand the concept of acting at that age. But I do remember being in the dressing room and going through lines with her. And then it being just a normal process of going onto the set and doing the lines. So it's a really interesting concept.
Just to prove, of course, that you are into drama and music, I'm sat talking to you on a Zoom call here with three electric guitars behind, I think, from and some headphones. You're clearly in the music business.
Look, my husband's a guitarist. So actually, when I met him back in Guernsey, when I moved back about, I think I was about 28, we created a band together called the Tracy Barlows.
So it still lives on then. Your connection still lives on, doesn't it, with it?
So we had a six-piece band together in Guernsey, and obviously one of the lead singers, obviously. So... and the egg shaker. And then obviously we moved to Australia, to Perth, about 11 years ago now. So we do duo work and we do trio work. So we're still gigging. We've got a gig this Friday, actually. it's a Christmas in July gig. So we're doing lots of Christmas songs together.
Going back to Corrie, there were a few little things while you were there, and I don't know whether you were involved in these or not. There were things like... you were very young at this point, though, I think. There was the Queen Silver Jubilee in 1977, which was done outside with everybody dressing up and stuff like that. You probably don't remember that. You were very young then, weren't you? So you probably don't remember that.
But I remember, you know, seeing pictures.
Do you remember
anything? Was it Julie Goodyear dressed as, like, Raw Britannia?
Yeah, that's right.
I think.
But do you remember any things like that, any sort of events like that, where there was, like, obviously you mentioned the christening, which you can't remember because you were too young, but what about, was there any particular, you know, parties in the street? Was there any things that you were dragged to that were sort of, can you remember anything like that, both on and off screen?
Yeah, so there was one on screen where, it must have been about three, but I can't remember what it was for. Oh, goodness me. Well, I had to be in an egg and spoon race. But obviously, Tracy had to win. So all the other kids, the poor kids, have to like, and I'm like, yay, and just running and being first, but not realising that actually Tracy had to win. And my sister, because my sister's 10 years older than me, was asked to be in the scene too, like to be an extra. But I don't think she was bothered. She was like sitting in the background going, no, I don't want to do it.
I think that might have been, because I remember a picture of Vera and, not Deirdre, but Vera and Hilda. So Jean Alexander and Liz Dawn and someone else, I can't remember who the third one was, doing something like a race of some kind. And I think it might have been to do with Prince Charles and Princess Diana getting married in 1981. I think it was a street party. And so you're probably doing an egg and spoon race or something at the street party. That might have been it, might it?
I think you're right, because I remember lots of like British flags, like bunting.
Yeah.
So... Yeah, I think you're right.
Yeah, exactly. And what about just the bigger picture of the Granada Studios? Obviously, was this magical place. There was so much going on there all the time. Obviously, you'd go in there, you'd have your day there, but you obviously, there was some downtime, you'd probably have lunch or whatever. What other things do you remember about the building? Do you remember anything about the other things you did while you were there, as well as literally being on Coronation Street? Do you remember spending time in the canteen or anything? Anything that springs to mind?
Again, a very, very fleeting memories. Canteen, but yeah, not just eating, not really anything interesting. But I do remember once, you're obviously going down the corridors, these massive doors that lead to big rooms, which are obviously, the studios. And do you remember Toya Wilcox? In the 1980s, she was shooting a music video, and I was allowed to go in and watch. I must have been about 4, 5, and go and watch. And then she gave me an autograph picture of herself, and that was like really like again like I'm starstruck because it's someone you recognise. Even though I wasn't starstruck by the people I'm working with.
What about things? I mean, obviously, this was huge. I mean, it's still huge now, but it was huge then, both in Britain and around in different parts of the world. I know it's big in New Zealand and Canada and all the rest of it. What do you remember about that side of things? Obviously, you were a kid, so they shield you to an extent, but did you have any sense that this was a big thing, that people were watching you every day or every twice a week in their living rooms? And did you understand any of that at that time?
No. No, definitely not. I mean, look, obviously, when we went on holidays, people would recognise me and go, oh, can we take a picture? And then can we get an autograph? And obviously, I can't write. I'm a child, so cross. But my mum used to carry around like little kind of cardboard, photos, promotional kind of, photos. And she'd sign it. From Christabel.
When did you realise that it was such a, big thing? I mean, because you wouldn't have known that at that age.
I suppose it kind of hit home when we left, because we moved to Guernsey and they were hounded by the press. The press were, going, where's Tracy gone? It was like headline news, like, Tracy kidnapped, and in little brackets, by her parents, the Sun, the Mirror. I'm like, but, they're just... They were following us around and they'd have like little cameras and take secret pictures of me going to school in Guernsey, and my dad was not happy. Yes. So that kind of like hit home, thinking, why is that person coming up to speak? And my dad going, get away from her, and shove me in the car. And I'm like, what's going on? So that kind of like hit home about being famous.
Absolutely. And did you find yourself... once later on sort of dipping into Corrie to see what had happened to Tracy?
To be honest, no. Okay. It's terrible. That's really terrible. I know.
It's all right. Don't worry.
I'm so sorry. Look, I probably back when I was a teenager, I'd watch EastEnders. But my mum was way into Coronation Street more than I was. So Oh, that's terrible, isn't it?
And she still watches it, does she, so many years later?
I think she does, yeah. So sometimes she'll say, I've got to go, you know, Corrie's on. We're on the phone to her.
Yeah, good stuff, good stuff. So, I mean, that is, you know, as we said earlier, on you know, that's you're part of history, really. You know, 6 or 7 years in the world's longest running drama serial, soap opera. Yeah. It's quite special, really, when you think back to it. And
absolutely,
yeah.
And all the iconic characters are just amazing actors. At that time. Yeah. It's just amazing.
Yeah, absolutely. And you were, as you say, you were in it at a period whereby a lot of those characters were still in it. Some of the original characters were still there, weren't they? You know what I mean? So,
exactly.
So
yeah.
Finally then, is there anything else you remember? Anything else you remember that you've not told us?
Oh, that's such a good question. I'm just trying to think.
Or anything funny or...
To be honest, that is probably all my memories. I mean, all I can say is that I had a fantastic time, and I just, you know, getting out of spelling every week was just like the highlight of my week being a child. But I had amazing people around me. You know, I was in an adult world, really, and people who really cared about me. Like, there's this guy called Gordon McKellar, and he was like Bill Podmore, who was the producer of Coronation Street. He was like his right hand man, and he looked after all the stars, but especially I found he was like always next to me, looking after me. And I remember one time going under the table in the dressing room and putting my hand into some rat poison. And I was just about to go, yummy. And he was like, no, he saved me from being poisoned. So I was very lucky to be around all these amazing people who just wanted the best for me, my parents wanting the best for me and protecting me, and I can't say anything bad about being.
Do you remember any other kids in it at the time? Because of course you were born roughly probably a couple of years before Nick Tilsley was born.
Yeah, absolutely.
Do you remember any of the younger kids now?
I don't. Annoyingly, I was the only child on set, because I suppose like Gail and Deirdre probably didn't hang out together. I don't think they hung out together.
No, they were slightly different, weren't they? They were different kind of characters. Yeah. I mean, Deirdre was more sort of, she was more of a mumsy kind of character, whereas I think Gail was a bit quite wild at one point, wasn't she, I think, in the early years. Yeah, yeah. Do you remember her? Do you remember Helen Worth? Do you remember seeing her?
I do, but again, did not really speak to her. It's a funny old time, yeah.
And you mentioned Alf Roberts. You mentioned Brian Moseley.
Yeah.
Yeah, do you remember? Yeah. I mean, he'd been there a long time. So do you remember him?
Again, a lovely guy. Lovely. And if I'm in the corner shop, he was, you know, eye contact and, you know, making me feel special. So, yeah, really good. I mean, look, I did go back to... Because you can do a tour now on Coronation Street. So I went back when I was about 16 to do a tour and see the set again. It was bizarre because everything's obviously really tiny, you know, especially on the exterior set. And it was just weird seeing all the cobbled streets, but it being very small. And then seeing Anne Kirkbride again, that was so lovely. Going to her house and seeing her, and she, again, we had a lovely conversation, and then meeting Johnny Briggs in the canteen. We'd gone to the canteen, and him going, I can't remember who was with me. I think it might have been Gordon McKellar. He said, hey, Johnny, do you remember who this person is? And he's like, no, I don't. And I said, it's Christabel Finch. And he's like, oh, I remember you when you were like this size. I said, well, I've grown a bit now, you know, I'm 16 now. So it was, everyone was just very cheery and happy, you know.
Yeah. And of course, while you were there, they actually moved the street, didn't they? Or they made a new street. A new street was built in 1982. Oh, Do you remember that? Remember the Queen coming to open it at all? You probably weren't invited to that bit.
Maybe. No, I don't remember. But I do remember vaguely it changing. Yeah. So, but wasn't there at the time when it happened.
You know, yeah, so. yeah, 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 yeah. Well, Christabel, it's been absolutely wonderful to chat to you all the way from Perth in Australia. And I'm glad your memories of Coria are so great. I mean, I know you can't remember everything at that age, I know, but you've been fabulous. You've told us some fantastic stuff. And, I mean, who knows? You know, Tracy's had so many different incarnations over the years. She's been so many different people. like they are in all these programs, but it's still bizarre to see that lovely little girl that you played turning into this monster.
I know.
but actually, deep down, I don't think she is a monster. Really, I think she's but something that happened. Yeah. Something happened between you finishing and Dawn coming along. Because it didn't do something happened with those tapes, and we still need to get to the bottom of it somehow. what we ought to do really is get all the Tracys back together again at some point. That's what we ought to do as a big reunion. Maybe we should try.
That would be fantastic. I'd love it.
Fabulous, good stuff. Lovely to talk to you, anyway, Isabel.
Lovely to talk to you. You take care. Thank you so much.
Thank you. That's great.
Christabel Finch speaking to Ashley, and we're on a mission to speak to all the Tracys and to find out what on earth she was listening to on those tapes for so many years. So watch this space. Distinct Nostalgia is produced by MIM, and if you like what we do, then please consider supporting us on Patreon. Every penny helps us to make even more amazing content just for you. Go to distinctnostalgia.com and click on the donate button. Thank you.
Distinct Nostalgia. More than a podcast.